What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
On the Billiken Sports Network from Learfield, this is the Billiken Coaches Show, presented by Edward Jones. Edward Jones is a proud sponsor of Billiken Athletics. Also brought to you by Royal Banks of Missouri, the community bank for your community. Now, here's your host, the voice of the Billikens, Bob Ramsey.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Billiken Coaches Show, featuring Josh Schertz, head basketball coach for Billiken Basketball. Coach, it's good to see you on an evening. Well, let's talk about today. Martin Luther King Day, presidential inauguration, and currently national championship football game. But we're going to focus on Billiken Basketball. How
as,
are you?
As will most of America.
I think so.
They're going to be locked into this. Quite a day. We're like they say the best for last. We started the show. We're right after the national championship game. Probably the best part of the day is right here.
Right here. There's no question about it. You know, it is interesting on Martin Luther King Day how important it has become, not just nationally, but in our world, meaning me and you, in athletics.
Yes.
And to the young men and women who are playing all sports.
Yes.
No matter what it is.
Yep.
But again, in our narrower focus, basketball, it's really, really important.
It is. It's, you know, we spend some time today, and I have every year. It was, I want our guys, and I think they did, you know, to understand, you know, Martin Luther King, his legacy, what he stood for, you know, not just equality, but for you know, to stand with the poor. He was a guy that we talked a lot about, you know, wanted America to be great for everybody. And that's ultimately the goal of the country, is to be as good as it can be for all people. And so his ambitions, you know, I said, I told the team, you know, he's a guy that he dedicated his life, suffered in his life, and ultimately gave his life for others. I don't know that there's a more powerful legacy that you can leave behind when you look at, you know, how he lived his life and what he was able to accomplish, the nonviolent protests, the progress that was made in that era. You know, for you know, African Americans, it's monumental. And I challenged our guys. I said, look, you know, this is something where, you know, people fought for you guys. You know, don't take it for granted, and understand that, you know, your opportunity to vote, your opportunity to impact the world, was laid by Martin Luther King and many others. And people did, as you know, suffer in their life. You know, they took beatings and jailings
and murders
and ultimately assassinations to give that opportunity. And so, I don't care how they vote. I want them to make sure they use their voice and are a part of that. And so that's what we're going to try to do.
The you know, I saw an interesting quote I'd never seen from Dr. King earlier today. And again, we know we're sports nerds, so how it affects our world of sports, which is very small and not that significant. But he talked about in this quote how he couldn't have done what he did, meaning Martin Luther King, had it not been for Jackie Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? And
yes.
And how very rarely is sports ahead of the curve when it comes to social issues. But for the one time that it really mattered, baseball was, and it really helped usher in that next 25, 30 years.
And, you know, it's a great point. I hadn't heard that, but it's so true, you know, what Jackie Robinson endured, you know, desegregating, you know, baseball. And, you know, I remember watching that movie. Obviously, it was before my time, you know, but watching, you know, his movie and kind of his history and reading about his the biography of his life and the things he endured and the way he had to endure them. I mean, unbelievable, almost incomprehensible when you think about it now and where the world is today.
Right.
But
truly horrific.
Yeah, horrific. And but that is the way it works, is that people, you know, live their lives and people that are impactful in such a way that you know, they may not see the fruits of their labor, but they lay the groundwork. And then it's the next group that comes and builds upon that.
And the next
group that comes and builds upon that. And so, you know, without Jackie Robinson, that great point of, well, then, you know, Martin Luther King. And without Martin Luther King, I don't think we have a black president, you know, at a certain point. You know what I mean? Like, that wouldn't have been possible in those, because they couldn't even vote. You know what I mean? So the things you take for granted now, that in our Declaration of Independence, where, hey, you know, all men are created equal and given the same rights. And it really wasn't always that way. And Martin Luther King and what he did, remarkable. And so, yes, I agree.
When you talk to your team about Martin Luther King Day, do you feel like, tell me what kind of feedback or what kind of vibe you get when you're talking to the guys about something this important?
I think guys understand it. I think, you know, they recognize, and I think it's a powerful day. I say, it's a great day. It's one thing to have a street named after you or a highway or whatever. When you got a national holiday for an African American that was that impactful, that, you know, that we're celebrating, the whole country rallies around Martin Luther King, and it transcends, right, political parties or rural, urban, all the things that tend to divide us.
Yeah.
You know, you can always find somebody. But it's going to be very rare to find somebody who's, Martin Luther King, almost to a person.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to be like, man, what an iconic figure, what a great American, the things he stood for, the things he ultimately laid his life down for. Like I said, the sacrifice in the pursuit of equality for, like I said, and what he did for African, you know, for African-American equality, but also for, like I said, equality for the poor, for opportunity. For everybody to have the same chance to be successful, which is ultimately what this country is about, is that
Right. Everybody
should have the same. Not everybody's going to get the same, but you should have the same opportunities. And what he lived for. There's very few people, and that's the thing I love about sports is sports in this country where so much is put out to divide us based on how we look or how we pray or how we love or whatever the case may be. Right? There's all these divisions or what political party we're. Whether whatever the case may be, sports is an unbelievable unifier. You know, you go to those stadiums and there's all kinds of people there and they're supporting their team. And I think what sports does, and you've been around it for such a long time, you know, your whole life, and I have too, is a lot of times where people hate somebody or dislike somebody, it usually falls back to they either fear it or they're ignorant of it. And sports puts you in a position where, you know, you're never going to have that, because you're going to go in a locker room and there's going to be, you know, black people, white people, Hispanics, there's going to be Asian, going to be Muslims, Christians, Jews,
foreigners,
they're going to go from other countries.
Yeah.
And you're going to see that we're so much more alike than we're different. And no matter what, we all have the same ambitions for ourselves and our families. We may come from different backgrounds, but we have the same goals and ambitions. We want, you know, financial freedom. We want to be, you know, have healthy families. We want equal opportunity for ourselves. We want to make a better life for our kids. We all really want the same stuff. And so I'm Jewish. My assistant, who's one of my closest friends in the world, is Palestinian. You know, Omar Watad was with me, and he's a head coach at Lander now. And I love his family. And obviously, with all the stuff going on in Hamas and Israel. But that doesn't affect my relationship with him. I don't look at, you know, that hasn't changed at all. And I love him like a brother. And I know he feels the same way about me. And I love his parents. And so I think sports allows you to have a perspective that's greater than if you didn't. Because you're around those people in a way that you truly get to know them. And you really realize how our differences can be such a strength versus how our differences can just be. Like, a diversity can be such a strength if we use it right.
You know, I don't know if you watched any NFL yesterday, but at the end of the second game, one of the things, the Buffalo game, one of the things that I love, and you see it all the time, and maybe I knew because it was MLK Day the next day or whatever, not only at the end of the game, guys from different teams embracing each other, mm-hmm. and different colors and all those kinds of things, they got on the field, they played their guts out, and then afterwards, they embrace and pulled for each other. And I just, again, I'm coming from, I'm a sports honk.
Right.
But I think there's a real value in athletics to bring people together that way. And I just find those kinds of things heartwarming.
No, it is. And it is. Sports is an ultimate unifier. You get into a locker room and you could be, you know, you got guys from the city, guys from the country, you got guys from all kinds of, you know, races and religions and every, you know, every kind of background. And you all come together under a common goal and a common umbrella. And you spend
and
all this time
and playing for something greater than yourself, right?
Greater than yourself, yes. And you realize that, you know, man, I may not have been exposed when I was growing up to a person like this, but now that I am, they're pretty cool. I like them. And then it changes your perspective on, because then, you know, like, well, if they're cool, then is, you know, are other people like that cool? And then you know, it cultures you. It broadens your perspective because you're associated and you have actual interaction. Like I said, hate usually stems from fear or ignorance.
Yes,
and
no
so
doubt.
People are fearful of something they don't know, or they're just they never met somebody like that, and they're told, well, this person, all these people are X. And then they say, okay, well, all the people are X, and then they never would associate with X because, but these interactions and sports is, I think it's such a great vehicle for all people. I wish every kid could play sports, whether they were good in athletics or not. Because learning how to win, learning how to lose, learning how to be part of something bigger than yourself, you know, handling success, handling failure, work ethic, you know, all these different things that actually benefit you in life.
All three of my kids played, and I pushed them, I admit it,
yeah.
But for those reasons, not because I thought they were going to be professionals, but, and one of the great things, I agree with every word you said. And in addition, the most important thing for me was I wanted to learn work reward.
Yep.
And that you get back what you put into it. And
absolutely.
That was, I thought, a real key in having them play whatever sports they were going to play.
Well, you know, you're so right. And I think that, you know, being working for something and not always having success, you know, being able to handle failure. Because
right.
It's about handling failure.
Absolutely.
Being able to piece something up. And you know, it's funny. They asked when our kids, so my son Jaden was a senior a couple years ago in high school, and they asked us at his high school to each write a letter to our child, you know, about what we thought was the most important, you know, value trait, like kind of what we wanted for their future and all those things. And, you know, and I told Jaden in a letter that I thought the greatest thing you can be in life was a great teammate. I thought of anything anybody could tell you, if you're a great teammate, it's going to make you a great husband. It's going to make you a great father. It's going to make you a great employee. It's going to make you a great community member.
Yep.
Like, I don't know that there's a better thing that you could be. It says, man, that guy's a great teammate. Because that means, you know, you're compassionate, you're understanding, you work well with other people. You know, there's all these values. You want to be a part of something bigger than just you. You live a life that's not for yourself. You can enjoy other people's success. I mean, there's all these things that go into being a great teammate. And I know for Jaden, like, being a walk-on on the team and, you know, practicing every day and not getting the reward necessarily of playing. And he's not, you know, in the media, and he's not getting what Robbie gets, and he's not getting NIL, and they show up every day, and they got to do all the same stuff.
All the same
and,
stuff.
And you sit there and you go, man, like, what a great learning vehicle for him. What a great lab for him to figure out life. And ultimately, that's what I was telling him, like, you're learning the value of being a great teammate, and in some ways, you're getting even more out of it than Robbie and those guys because, you know, you're having to do it completely from a altruistic, self-sacrifice standpoint because you're practicing in the scout team, you're doing all this stuff, no one's there to watch it, you don't really get in the games, you stand on the bench, you cheer your teammates, right? You don't get in the NIL, you're not doing it as a, you know, and so I just think it's such an awesome thing for men, for your kids, and really for every kid would benefit from that if they could be a part of sports. Like you said, not to be a pro, not to my son's going to play in the NFL or my daughter's going to play in the WNBA or whatever the case may be, but just because they learn success, failure, something being yourself, how to be a great teammate, like you said, how to work for something, how to get a reward, how to work for something, which I think is so important in life, to put everything you have into something and it not go your way. And learn that just because you give everything to something doesn't mean necessarily you're going to get what you wanted. That sometimes in life, you put everything you have into something and it doesn't happen for you. And that, you know, that's a part of life too, that you can still pick yourself up and have no regrets and say, hey,
I gave it
everything I had. It didn't work out, but I'm not having regrets about it. And so being able to handle successes, handle failures, those are things that every person in the world could benefit from. Being around people different than yourself and getting outside your comfort zone, being, you know, all those things are so incredibly valuable for human beings. The world would be a much better place if everybody at some point in life played competitive sports, because I really think it'd be
even for a little while,
just for a little, even if it was in
CYC,
middle school,
whatever,
elementary school, whatever it is.
Yeah. Before we take our first break, because the football game is going on, and I say this as a compliment, you're a basketball nerd.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm a baseball nerd,
yeah,
and secondarily basketball nerd. But so we nerds, I mean, yeah, I know how we dig into things.
Mm-hmm.
Were you ever a football fan, or are you a college football or pro football fan?
I love watching football. I do. I don't watch in the way of, like, the basketball I watch, and I'm constantly watching,
yeah,
it, like, in an analytical way. Football, I truly watch. Like, football is something I turn on when I want to just, like,
escape,
like, decompress, yes, and watch and be like, I love a Saturday. If we're not, like, I'll watch college football games. I love, you know, SEC on CBS, or, you know, I love watching the NFL playoff games. I grew up a Giants fan.
Did you really? Yeah, not a Dolphins fan.
No, because I grew up, I lived in New York from birth to 12.
So, okay.
I moved to Florida when I was 12. So I grew up a Giants fan. I went to some Giants games. My grandpa had tickets. You know, you go in there and just freeze in the middle.
No doubt.
You know, it was just freezing. But I loved it. I love watching football. I watch it as a complete fan. I admire coaches. I admire players. You know, I love college football. Love NFL football. I watch that. I watch tennis when it comes on. Like, I'll watch the Australian
Open. For those
Open.
Who don't know,
yeah,
you, with
I
your
grew up
tennis,
with a tennis
background.
Player. All those things to me are how I kind of decompress my brain if I want to just, hey, turn off basketball for a second, not watch film. Let me pop on one of those, and I can lose myself for a couple hours, which outside of a movie is the only way I can usually do it.
So I used to I always try and watch all the majors in tennis, but I haven't had a chance with the Australian mm-hmm. this year. The female that –
Oh, you're talking about the one, number one in the world, or Danielle Collins?
Yeah, that was giving it back to the
fans.
Yeah,
fan. Danielle Collins, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah,
is that good or bad for tennis?
I think it's great. I mean, you know, tennis needs some personality. The fans were on her. You know, they were really against her. I think it happened in the first round. They were against her because she was playing in Australia.
Yeah.
And she was kind of giving it back to them because she was, you know, they were booing her or whatever, and they wanted, which is normal.
It is normal,
And it's okay. And then the second round, I think they carried the grudge, the fans did a little bit.
Because she won
the first round, beat the Australian, and she was kind of giving it back to them a little bit. And then she really gave it back to them. And
crazy.
But you know what? It's awesome. Like you know.
Well, it's like McEnroe.
Yeah. Djokovic does it some.
Yeah.
Like you know, you got to be like, if you walk in a hostile territory, and you got to be able to you know, that's part of, I wish that, I like the personality piece. I think it's good. You know, and I thought you know, Djokovic at Wimbledon, I think it was a year ago, had a similar deal with the crowd there, and he basically went at them afterwards. And she said, you know, hey, thanks for paying my paycheck, and yeah, I'm going to take a 5-star vacation. I'm going to do this, and told him to kiss her, you know what. And so it was awesome. I think those things are great for tennis, and it gives people something to talk. And I think the personality piece is great.
That's Josh Schertz. He's the head coach of Billiken Basketball, which we'll talk about, and talk about being in hostile territory when we return on the Billiken Coaches Show. Thanks for being with us tonight. I know with everything going on today, it might not have been at the top of your list, but for those of you with us on Camo X, we're glad you're there. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Billiken Coaches Show. Josh Schertz is here. I'm Bob Ramsey. Of course, we're at Westport Social, a fantastic place, and still some spots to come in and watch some college football where it's tied up 7-7. And before we took our break, Coach Schertz was talking about learning about going into hostile areas and being able to perform and accept it. And doesn't get much more hostile than VCU a week ago. And you had two games in Richmond, Virginia. And those are tough. You were out a whole week. And so talk about attitude going in, and then now you've run that gauntlet, how you felt about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, going in, it's a long trip. It was honestly a sensical thing. You know, I kind of wish we would have played Wednesday, Saturday, but it was Tuesday. And, you know, we went out there, and I think we knew we were gonna have a great test against VCU. We know how good they are. We know how hard they are to beat at home. They're horrendous on their home floor. And we knew it was going to be a great challenge, and it was. You know, I thought it was a game. You know, we talked about it after. Just really disappointed, not in losing to VCU, because I think when you lose to a great team, you know, there's always that possibility. You're playing I think one of the better, you know, in my mind, a top 40 team in the country in the
whole
four. You know,
I agree.
No question. So that part wasn't, you know, the way we lost to me was the point that I was really upset about.
You were upset, but I appreciated the way when you spoke to us on the postgame show, you were upset, but you were still analytical.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you have to be, right?
You do. I mean, there's times where, you know, I've been with this team leaving Wichita State where I was probably not analytical. I was just pissed, you know.
I do know.
You know, and because I felt like in that scenario, you know, like I didn't think that against VCU we didn't compete. I think I want to make that, because I don't want people to think, oh, they didn't try. We were trying. We got manhandled.
You got steamrolled.
And absolutely thrown around. And some of that probably isn't legal, but it was that night. So if it becomes, like I said, you know, if it becomes a street fight, then you got to be ready for a street fight. And if they're saying, hey, look, they can toss you around, they can throw you to the ground, like Gibson got slung to the ground, and there was other players, they pushed us and knocked the ball back. Like, if they're allowing it, then you got to play the rules of the game. Now, that might not be the way the rules were intended, but that's the way the rules were played that night. And I was disappointed in our physicality, and I was disappointed in our physicality offensively. I thought, as bad as our rebounding was, I thought, honestly, we lost the game offensively with the turnovers, being soft with the ball, our lack of ability to execute against them. They're an excellent defense, but we were really, really bad. And, you know, in terms of our physicality piece, and I think it was a good lesson for our guys of, hey, you know, you wanna play with the big boys, you wanna be, you know, a championship level program. Okay, here's the bar, because they set it. And now, and it's always about what you take with the information that the competition gives you. And we've talked a lot about this. You know, every game in this league presents a challenge, and the challenges are usually very different in terms of what it takes to compete or beat it. Like Richmond and VCU couldn't be more polar opposite.
Right.
But they're equally challenging. They're just challenging in different ways. One's a physical challenge and this throw you to the ground, you know, street fight. Other one is really a mental challenge of, can you guard for 30 seconds? Can you be disciplined enough against a Princeton offense? Can you execute against the way they're guarding you, right? So there's all these different things. And then LaSalle will present its own set of challenges that we have to meet on Wednesday night. And then George Washington, and on it goes. But the whole key is, you know, that'll be, as long as we take the lessons from Tuesday night, it'll be a painful lesson, but hopefully one we learn and that we get more physical, because we saw, okay, like, to win high-level games, there's a level of competitiveness and a level of physicality and a level of execution you got to have. If you don't have all three things, you ain't beating great teams.
No.
You know, if you compete and you execute but you're not physical, it ain't happening. If you compete and you're physical but you don't execute, it ain't happening. So you got to do all three at a really high level. And we're learning as we go, kind of like, okay.
Your team is still evolving.
Absolutely evolved. I mean, we've played 18 games together. And in that, and really it's not 18 because we've had so many various things. It's really a much smaller window than that, right? I mean, Robbie missed four, and I think Kelby missed the first three, and you know what I mean? And then there's just been guys in and out, and we've gotten some clarity. Like, we have clarity on you know, AJ Casey's situation, or Josiah Dolts, or Larry Hughes, or even Kellen, you know? I mean, there's a clarity of, hey, this is his window of playing time. This is what it's going to be. And at some point in there, you know, he's going to hit his limit, and we're going to be done. And that might be 7 minutes or 8 minutes, or might be 12 or 13 minutes. It varies game to game, but it's going to be in that window, right? So, you know, we have clarity on where we are. But we're absolutely evolving, and we should be evolving all the way through this thing. And the evolution comes from right now is the competition giving us, you know, that's how you sharpen your blade.
Different challenges,
and you got to meet those challenges. And so, man, you know, was I proud of, you know, our defensive discipline against Richmond, which you need to beat them. But I was disappointed in our lack of physicality. But I don't think our guys didn't compete. They weren't trying. I think they were overwhelmed by how physical the game was on both ends. and we weren't able to respond. And ultimately, you know, that's on, like I said, you know, it's my job to make sure that we're able to, from a competitiveness, how hard we play, from a physicality standpoint and from an execution standpoint, that we're good enough in all three areas to beat the very best teams in our league and the very best teams in the country. And that's, you know, that's on me. So that's I got to do a better job. And I think the guys now know where that line is, and now we can work towards that. Say, hey, you know, when we screw up something in practice, that's physical. You remember what happened last time? You know, yeah. We missed this, box out, or didn't do this, and now you have that frame of reference. And you know, the good news or bad news thing you look at is, you know, we're doing that again with them in 8 days. So you know, we have a very short time to apply those lessons. And I thought we were more physical against Richmond. Again, Richmond doesn't test you in the same way. But we'll see here. LaSalle, GW, there'll be some physical tests here before we hook back up with VCU.
First trip through the league. I'll probably continue to ask you as the season goes on, what did you think of the atmosphere at VCU? I think it's unheralded and one of the best in the country, in my opinion.
I agree. The band was amazing.
They're really good.
I mean, my gosh, and the energy level in there, you know.
For a building that's, and I don't mean to cast aspersions, I don't. Basically, it's a big gym.
Yes.
7,000 seats, but it's a gym.
Yep.
And they turn it into a basketball madhouse.
It's a madhouse. I mean, the environment, how loud it was, the way they were supporting them, the bands right by your bench, they're just playing. I mean, you can barely hear yourself think. And you know, what makes, you know, I've always said this, like, what makes a place hard to play in two things. The most important part is you got to have good players, because if the team stinks, the environment can't save you. But when you have a really good team and you have an amazing environment, those are the hardest places to win. I mean, and that's what you're trying to build in Chaffetz. We want to get a good enough team and create a big enough and tough enough environment that people come in there, and it's almost impossible to beat a team when you have those two things going for you. And that's what
and
we're
in our building, when you got 10,000 people going, now it's
now
a different deal.
Yeah, the place is rocking, and people can't hear themselves think, and our fans are right there and engaged in the game. And, you know, and so you have to, you know, to win on the road, you know, it really tests how tight-knit you are, how connected you are, how tight your circle is. You know, I think you know, that's what I love. I love playing at home, but I actually, in a lot of ways, I love the challenges of the road just as much.
Sure,
because
I think get that.
I think you really see who you are when it's just you. You know, when you have the – I mean, playing at home is awesome. But when you're on the road, I mean, there's just such a toughness about, like, to go in and have to play. And so, you know, it's a great – I've heard about how good Dayton is. I've heard, you know, obviously I went to Fordham, and Fordham was just – it wasn't a great crowd. I think, you know, maybe just because it was right over – you know, it was New Year's Eve. But that iconic Jimmy Rose Hill gym is, like, on the bucket list of, like, places to go visit. So two really cool places. And Richmond, I thought, honestly, had a great crowd.
It's a nice building.
You know, nice building, beautiful campus.
Yeah.
And I thought their crowd, it wasn't as rowdy as VCU, but it got loud in there.
When
they
made their
run, very supportive. When they made their run, that place got super loud. When they got up with 5 minutes to go, that place was rocking.
Let's talk about that. This is an outsider's question. They go on a 16-2 run. What happened in that run? Talk about, because I know you've gone back and looked at it, and it's usually it's not one thing, but it's one thing that leads to another, right?
Yeah, there was a plethora of things. When you have a 16-2 run against you, there's a lot of things that happen that you know, basketball is a game of momentum, and that's the kind of the, you know, it's elusive, you know, like you think you're going, like we were up and felt like we had control of the game. And then, you know, we obviously offensively, you know, a couple turnovers. We missed a couple layups. We missed a couple free throws. You know, defensively, I thought we had more breakdowns. You know, we go whip a ball screen. We get hung up, make a three. Neskovich in the second half, I thought we really struggled to control him. Kobe was dealing with Kobe first half did a great job on him. And Kobe was dealing with some hamstring tightness. He had to come out for a while and was hurting. So we did a poor job on him. Kobe did, you know, because he was hurting. And then we did a poor job really until Kalu got on him. And then some of it was just them making plays.
Kalu did a really nice job late, didn't
he? The last 4 or 5 minutes, our defense was airtight, you know. And
let's talk about that, because I don't want to be all the negatives what happened. But then what happened, you're down 7, yep. And time's running out. And I'm going, oh, my gosh,
yeah.
Is this really happening? And then what happened for you guys to flip the script?
Yeah, well, I showed the team today, the first clip I showed them was us coming down, and the score was 56-49, and there was 4 minutes and 31 seconds left. Because I said, I just want you to remember this. I said, you know, moving forward, that 7 down, 4 minutes, 30 seconds left is not untenable. And I showed them the same thing when it was St. Bonaventure, who were up 13 with 4 some to go.
And they
came back. So I want them to process those experiences of, hey, you got to play the entire 40. You know, those are 140 to 150 possessions a game. You got to play the possession in front of you without, you know, looking at the scoreboard or thinking, you know, worrying about what the deal is. I thought our body language, you know, was kind of getting a little bit, we were getting a little bit of slumped shoulders because, you know, they made a couple tough shots in a row, the Neskovich 3 to go 54, and then I think it was a tough pull-up by maybe it was Artis White, I think, B. Artis White or whatever his name is. He made the tough pull-up. And we're down 7. Those two possessions actually guarded well, and they made shots. And we were missing some, we got some wide-open looks. Swope got a wide-open look. Gibb got a wide-open look. It's like, man, you know, we had a couple layups. Gibb misses 2 free throws, which is, you know, super rare.
In fact, that Swope was right in front of you,
yes.
I believe. I thought it was in.
Wide open, you know.
And how did it not go in?
You're going, and sometimes, you know, it's just, you know, that's the way the ball bounces. You know, it's just not meant to be. And there was, but I loved our guys' resilience. I thought in the moments of truth, the last 4.5 minutes, our offensive execution was outstanding. Our defense, we got 7 stops in a row.
7 in a row. That's unheard of at any point in the game.
Any point in the game. 7, you know, a kill is 3 stops in a row. We got back-to-back kills. And honestly...
Wait a minute. That's what you guys... A kill.
3 in a row is a kill. And usually if you get, you know, 6 kills in a game, you can, you know, almost guaranteed to win.
And you got 7 in a row.
Seven stops in a row. So 2 kills and a plus 1. And they come to the rim, you know, even the one, we get up 3, and then the shot that Neskovich makes over Robbie was a really tough shot.
Yeah.
And then we go down in our execution late, you know, making free throws. Obviously, Dylan's 2 free throws, the 1-on-1, I mean, was, you know, that was a, you know, I can't pull my hair out for obvious reasons. But, you know, we get the ball to Swope. We ran a play where we tried to, you know, get him long. And we get him long, and the guy comes up, and all he's got to do is throw it to Dylan, and Dylan lays it in, and Swope waits, which wasn't great. Then he does throw it to Dylan eventually, and Dylan, instead of laying it in, turns away from the basket and gets fouled. And we're like, oh, my God, you know. So now you got this freshman stepping up there with 21 seconds left in a 1-point game and a 1-and-1, not even a 2-shot foul. And
when I talked to Coach Bovaire, and he goes, I wasn't surprised. I go, really? He goes, you got to understand this kid's pedigree,
yeah.
Right?
True. No, that's what I said in the, you know, I don't know if I was making myself believe it or not, but I said, you know, I said, hey, I said, you know, you're a winner. This is what you do. And he's won at such a high level everywhere he's been. I mean, state championships. He's just a guy, like, I think I said this about him before, like, he's not a guy, like, normally that I would recruit because there's not, you know, you watch Dylan play, and he's not a great athlete. He's not super fast, not a great jumper. He doesn't make a ton of threes. He's not an elite defender. There's not like an analytic you can assign to his game. Like, and say, well, he just wins. And he finds a way. He finds a way to win. He affects winning, man. And that's probably, you know, I mean, you know, about as good a thing as you could say about a player. He just wins. He wins games. And he, those 2 massive free throws, they go down, make a really tough shot. You know, we try to get the ball to Gibb. Swope gets fouled. He'd been struggling a little bit from the line for him relative to what he can do. He goes up and makes 2, you know, which was obviously massive. We fouled on purpose, you know, in that scenario we talked about, you know, to put them at the line because the timing was where we wanted to be. And, you know, they made 1. I don't know if they missed the second one on purpose or not, but, you know, our lesson from Grand Canyon was, you know, you can lose a game on a missed box out,
right?
And that's what prevented us from, I mean, there was a lot of plays. You don't want to blame it on one play, but had we boxed a shooter at Grand Canyon, win the game, right? So that's just a simple bit. Now, we made 100 other plays in that game, win the game as well, but just had we boxed
in that moment, yeah.
And so we
got a great box out
on
their
box
miss.
Out, great box out, both guys, and Robbie goes and gets it, and then he makes 2 to seal the deal. And what a great closing money time. We call it money time. What a great money time on both ends of the floor to close that game out on the road in a tough environment against a really good team.
Let's before we go to a break, if you don't mind, talk about that the thing about fouling late. Yeah. Do you foul or not foul late?
Yeah, you know, I think it's always there's always some variant situation. Like, do you have a timeout because you're getting pressed? You know, how is your rebounding team? How good a rebounding team are they? But in general, my rule of thumb has always been from about 7.5 to 2.5 seconds. The reason I don't like to do it before 7.5 is I think that it just creates too much time. You know, it just
too much time to recover from whatever happens.
Whatever happens. I mean, you know, if you foul with 18 seconds left, well, now they got it. They go make two. Now you're one. Now you miss one.
There's multiple possessions left.
Right. I mean, you're just giving them, you know, opportunities. I always think if you get down to about 7.5 seconds left, we made the free throw. I think there was like 8.8. So we call it smack. And I just told them, I said, hey, smack if we're up three, you know, at half court as the ball gets half. And so we went smack, and there was like 5 point whatever seconds left, I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
And that's plenty of time. I think when you get below, you saw it in the UMass-Fordham game. That's how the game went to overtime. Was I think UMass, if I'm not mistaken, was up three. And I could have this flipped. It might have been Fordham. But one of them was up three, and there was like 1.4 seconds left. And they threw it in, and the guy caught it, and the guy tried to foul him. But as he fouled him, he was shooting it. And now it's a three-shot foul. So anything below 2.5 seconds,
because they're really catching
playing,
and shooting.
Yeah, you're playing with fire. You can run through the passing and foul the guy on the catch. But as soon as he touches the ball, if you try to foul, it's going up, and you're going to wind up with a three-shot foul, which is exactly what you don't want. So I think you got to really think those things through, and have a philosophy that you stick to. And so, like I said, is there variances? Of course. I mean, maybe, you know, VCU, who's a great rebounding team, would you say, man, we may be less likely to do that. And maybe it's not as good a three. If you have no timeouts, because then maybe you get the ball out of bounds under and you know.
Now what?
You know, yeah. You can't have timeout. So, yes, there's extraneous factors. But at the end of the day, like, that's the basic gist of it, is 2.5 to 7.5. I'm a believer in the foul. I think it gives you the best chance. You see so many of those late threes, you know, and it's a dagger. So I think it's the best way to handle those late game situations.
Did you happen to see the end of the TCU-Baylor game?
I did.
Yesterday?
Yes.
Was that crazy?
Yes. Yeah, wild.
Dagger threes from each side.
Each side.
Last shot wins.
Yeah, last shot wins. I mean, they you know, Baylor gets out of bounds under, and guy drills
and
a three.
And they had stormed back. They were down.
Yeah, I caught the end of it, and so they make the three to tie it. And then TCU, length of the court, you know, and kicks it out, and they go, and Baylor went zone. You know, they call a timeout, which I thought was a smart move by Baylor, try to change it up and see how. But then, you know, they get in the paint, kick it out, and they make a wide-open three and win the game. So pretty remarkable.
Making shots makes coaches smile.
Makes coaches look much smarter than we are, or dumber. Either way, Village, you're a genius or a Village idiot. You know, one of the two. So.
All right, we're going to take a break. One more segment coming up with Josh Schertz on the Billiken Coaches Show. Don't go away. We're at Westport Social, and we'll be right back.
High post to Obule. He's got the little on him.
Robbie.
Does he want to back him down? He does. Robbie takes his man. Left hand window. Yes! Bills back on top. 57-56. Oh, baby.
Like I said, don't complicate this thing.
Earl keeps it simple. Don't complicate it.
Hey,
don't,
Earl's right. You know, you can, coaches, you can overcomplicate stuff, but, you know, that was pretty simple.
Those kind of mismatch recognition by you and your guys, I thought was really good.
Yeah, they were switching five all game, so like they were switching every action off ball, every action on ball. It was similar to how VCU guarded us, you know, trying to kind of flatten us out and keep us, you know, from creating advantages. And we were able to obviously, you know, you can attack VCU. It's different, but just because of how physical they are. But we did a pretty good job. I thought Robbie in the post, you know, to score 24 and 90, didn't make any threes. You know, the switching kind of takes some of that away. But the goal there was to get the ball to him in the middle channel where the double team was hard to come by. And then we had, you know, we had Isaiah Gibson spaced on the two side. We had, obviously, Kalu in the you know, in the dunk spot. And then Kobe in the opposite corner, and just let him play in that middle channel, try to get Artis, you know, I think it was B. Artis White, it's, you know, 5'10 or so. And they decided not to double, which, you know, obviously if you double, then you're going to give up an open three.
And that's what they were concerned about.
Right.
More than
him scoring. But, I mean, you know, he did a good job of, hey, I'm just going to keep going, you know, and he got down there and was able to get a layup in.
Quick, and I'll try and make it quick, a little bit of background. for whatever reason in my weird nerd brain, as we'd already established, I've always loved Cuban baseball. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there is a there's a team, or I don't know if it's still there, but the Elefantes.
Okay.
And they're I can't say it in Spanish, but their slogan says the pace of the elephant is slow but crushing.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I've used that a couple times with Robbie, and I realized, boy, he might take that as an insult. I don't mean it as an insult. I mean it is he does his pace.
Yes.
He creates the pace and makes you adjust to him.
No
question. And so sometimes it looks like, well, I'm just kind of sauntering to the rim and stuff, but his pace will end up crushing you, just like the Elefantes.
Absolutely. No, he does. I think there's a few guys, you know, there's great examples, of course, of like in the NBA of a Luka Doncic,
yeah,
a Nikola Jokic. They're not speed demons either. I mean, those guys, it's a compliment. These guys, they play at their own pace. They never get sped up. They never get rattled. You know, Robbie's on the floor with a bunch of guys, and, you know, Richmond still, but certainly most every game he plays, like, he would know, like, he's the worst athlete, you know, of the 10 players that are out there.
But perhaps the best basketball
but
player.
But perhaps the best because of his intelligence, because of, you know, he compensates for a lack of physical quickness with mental quickness.
Mm-hmm. No
you
doubt.
You know, he's got a great mental quickness. And like you said, he never gets sped up. He never gets rattled. He's always playing at his own pace. He sees the game. He sees all 10 guys on the floor at the same time. You know, he knows where to attack. And he's got a great clutch gene. So all those things are just
the clutch gene. I love it.
He does.
I love it.
He absolutely has that, as we've seen many times right this year.
Yep.
I've been at a front row seat the last 3 years. That guy, when the lights are brightest, he tends to be at his best, which as you know, not everybody's not the case for every player.
We'll take our final break and come back and take a look at Wednesday night and LaSalle coming to Chaffetz Arena. Don't go away. It's the Billiken Coaches Show with Josh Schertz. Welcome back to Westport Social and the Billiken Coaches Show with Josh Schertz. We only got about a minute, Coach. Fran Dunphy, one of the great coaches in America, came out of retirement, took over LaSalle, and is trying to build them back. They're 10-8. They'll come in on Wednesday evening. Tell us what you know about LaSalle.
Really, you know, a team that's won a couple really tough games. One at St. Bonaventure, which is really hard to do.
Really hard.
Came from 18 down to beat Davidson. Was in a tie game last night with like 6 minutes to go. They got outscored like 22-1 down the stretch against UMass. But they're playing good basketball. Got terrific guards. McKeithen and Jones and Shepard are really hard to go. Lilly inside. Step outside and shoot threes. You know, one, I think it's Smith, or I think his name White, whatever. You know, number one, really good player. And as you said, Fran's one of the great coaches. I mean, but they come at you. They come at you for 40 minutes, really attack you. You got to be great on the ball, point of attack, defense. They change their defenses. They play man zone, all different kinds of things. We'll have to be really, really good for 40 minutes to win on Wednesday night.
We'll see everybody Wednesday night. And, of course, we'll have all the action for you on KMWX. Coach, this was a delight. Thank you, and we'll do it a few more times as this one rolls on.
Yes, sir, Rammer. Look forward to it. Always good seeing you.
That's Head Coach Josh Schertz. Thanks to our friends here at Westport Social. I'm Bob Ramsey. Thanks for joining us right here on KMWX.